Vic's a man of little words, but a lot of action. He's so proud to be in this class of 2015. He waited 37 years to get to the Hall of Fame. He just wanted me to tell all of his teammates who are here and thank them for being here. Our great coach and fellow Hall of Famer, Bud Grant. All the Viking fans who have come from all over the country. And all the rest of you fans. And even you Steeler fans who beat us in that Super Bowl. Thank you.
Well, Fran Tarkenton, maintaining his sense of humor and great emotion, as well as he helped salute Mick Tinglehoff, his teammate, the guy he took the snaps from for a very long time with your Minnesota Vikings. Fran, kind enough to join us today. Fran, of course, brought to you by Tarkenton.org. Give us a little more on that, Fran, before we talk about your Canton weekend.
Well, good, Dan. Good to be with you. We'll get this out of the way, but I want your listeners to go to our website, Tarkenton.org/affiliates, because we now have a program for affiliate memberships that can go out and start their own small business part-time out of their home, and we'll take our products, and they get paid great commissions there. And so that's, if you just go to Tarkenton.org/affiliates, you'll learn all about it.
Outstanding. We'll talk more about that as we get closer and closer to the season as well.
Okay.
Give us from a worldly perspective what you took out of your Hall of Fame weekend in Canton.
I hadn't been there in 29 years. I hadn't been there since I got into the Hall of Fame in 1986. It was an emotional weekend. Bud was there. Jerry Burns was there. Carl Eller was there, Paul Krause, Chuck Foreman, and Chris Carter, and so many of the modern day Vikings. And then, you know, I'm turning around every minute, and here comes up Joe Green.
Hmm.
Here comes up Lawrence Taylor. Here comes up Bob Lilly of my generation, who came in the league with me, who was an icon.
Yep.
Jim Otto was in a wheelchair. And I went over and visited with him. And then I spent so much time with Ronnie Lott and Lynn Swann and Jerry Rice, with guys that went in with me, Willie Lanier and Ken Houston, the great defensive back. And then Peyton Manning came backstage, and I'm a great friend with his father, Archie. And I spent an hour with Peyton Manning and Jim Kelly. Mike Holmgren came by, and and all these icons of National Football League. And the honor to be one of now 139 living Hall of Famers. Frank Gifford was 140 when we were there 2 days ago.
Right.
And the bond of these people, no egos, no anything, but I just felt an emotion that hit me like none other, that these are my teammates in that Hall of Fame. My bust is in the Hall of Fame with these 280-plus people. So many, half of those have deceased. And I'll be there forever. And we all have that sense of time and destiny and emotion and feeling. And I was overwhelmed. It was an emotional weekend for me.
It's a brotherhood, isn't it?
Oh, a brotherhood like none other. I just, the greatness that was there. You know, a lot of people have a talent, but these guys that are there, they have talent, but they have work ethic. They have a character, and they are bonded, like our teams were bonded. And it was so great to experience that. And nothing else mattered to me in those 48 hours I was there. I took my wife, Linda, with me of 27 years, my four children, three of which were there with me when I was playing. I had seven of my 10 grandchildren. And for them to see this environment and this culture, they were spellbound by it all. And to be able to take my great friend and center, Mick Tinglehoff, and, you know, he suffers with memory loss, and he was scared to death to talk to the group. They had rehearsed him to have two sentences, and he came to me, and one thing he could communicate with me, and I could communicate with him. And he kept telling me, I don't want to talk. I said, don't worry, I will take care of you. I will handle that for you. You will not have to do anything that you don't want to do. So we spent the 2 days together. We got over there, and I let him, when they announced his name, and we went and I, you know, unveiled his bust, and we had about 10 yards to go to the microphone. I said, now, Mick, would you like to just say thank you? He said, I don't want to say anything. Please, you do it. And that's what spurred it. I had no idea what I was going to say. And it just came out like it did, and I got emotional. I get emotional talking to you because it's special.
In when you in your conversations with Mick, how much did you sense this coming as late as it did mean to him? And is that part of why you got emotional as you were attempting to sort of, you know, lay this thing out?
I don't know how much he got, but he got something.
Yeah.
The morning of, you know, he said to Phyllis, he said, where am I? He came, but with me, I mean, he giggled, he laughed, he talked, and I would, you know, I said, Mick, this is his Bob Lilly. Mick Tinglehoff knocked Bob Lilly out of the game for about 5 minutes. He hit him one of the hardest hits I've ever seen. And he smiled, but I'm not sure he understood it was Bob Lilly. I said, Mick, this is Mean Joe. And so forth. And I don't know how much he got. But he got enough that he smiled. And he hugged. And he pitched me. And we laughed and we giggled, but I was at it, you know, it was just great. So he got something out of it. But I'll tell you what, the rest of us got a whole lot more. And it was a blessing for me to be able to take him by the hand and be there with him. And because this guy was always there for me, he was my roommate, my best friend, my confidant. And to shepherd him and caretake him during this time was special for me, and I'll never forget it.
Fran Tarkenton is our guest on The Fan. What made you stay away for 29 years, Fran?
Well, I've asked myself that question, and when I was there, I told my wife, I said, I was wrong. I should have come back because, you know, I missed Deacon Jones and Merlin Olsen. They're gone.
Yeah.
Johnny Yu's gone. Y.E. Tittle can't come back. And I missed all that. And I said, I'm gonna make every other one. I've got to come back. And they were so gracious to me. And all the players and the people that Lim Barney came up to me. And he was a great, great cornerback for Detroit.
One of the best, yeah.
And Lim Barney said to me, you're the reason I played football. I said, get out of here. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I played in Mississippi. I was a quarterback. I wanted to be like you. And it was this type of energy, all this stuff going on. And I sat there at that stage, and I'm looking, and it was unbelievable. And then Peyton comes in and spends an hour with me, and Jim Kelly was there, who just beat cancer. But you know, I didn't think about business for 48 hours. I was totally there. And when I played, I thought about nothing else but playing and the culture. And I really see the reason I think I really didn't go back is because if I was going to be successful over here in business, I had had the same concentration that I had in football. And I had to go and be there, just like I did there. And I think that's the reason when I look back and try to analyze it.
Mm.
I hope that I'm going to have the courage to go back next year. And I hope I have the courage to go back every other year, because it was something that if you're not part of it, you can never understand it. But and it's Dan Rooney, his father Art, was one of the original owners. And they're the greatest owners in the world. They hired coaches, they hired general managers, and let them coach and let them go. They want the stars. They want their players and their coaches to be the stars. That's what ownership's about. And that's what the fans want. And Dan Rooney was hunched over, the son of Art. He's in his 80s probably. And I said to him, I said, Mr. Rooney, said, call me Dan. I said, well, I'm Fran. I know who you are. I said, I need to tell you something. I never told your dad, but I tell you, you Rooneys are the foundation and the culture of what we have now in football. You've done it all right for all the history of the National Football League, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. And the Rooneys are a great role model for every ownership in the National Football League today. It's not about the owners. It's not about making megastars of Jerry Jones and some others who want to be out in front, but it's the fans want to see the players play and see the coaches coach, and that's who they react to. And if you'd have seen this event and been there and seen the culture of these guys, these great coaches and these great players and these great general managers that were put into this Hall of Fame, then you understand the culture of the National Football League and why it's great.
I'm really glad, based on what you're saying, that you went, because it sounds like what it did is maybe you were asking yourself, why didn't you do it sooner, but that you were able to sort of reestablish bonds on several levels that you may have thought lost, or maybe you didn't even know they existed.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know they existed. I had remade myself so much that I had moved on. It still had memories, but nothing like what I experienced this weekend. And as I've told you before, you know, I haven't come back to the Twin Cities to see Viking games. I came back for the 50th anniversary.
Right.
And I just haven't been back. When Mick got on the Circle of Honor, whatever they have there, I came back for that, but that's it. But I'm going to do everything. I'm going to try to commit to myself. I got to come back this year, you know. I want to see Bud, and I want to see Bernsey, and I talked to Fred Cox today, and I haven't seen Fred Cox in a long time. And Fred said, "You got to come back. We need to have lunch. You know, we need to talk, because we always talked. Fred Cox and I and Grady Alderman would get up 2 hours before the pregame meal on every Sunday morning and go down to the coffee shop and have coffee and just talk football, football, football. And I hope that I have the courage to go back and spend a weekend there to, you know, not to see the game.
Sure.
But to be able to be with all my guys that are there, because I love the guys. I love the Vikings. I love the history. And for your listeners, I was at the first training camp, the first day. I was at the first, I played in the first game. it's my life, and I remember it, but I need to go back and relive it some more.
Why do you say you hope you have the courage to? Why should that take courage, given how important it was to you? Is it the idea of you wanted to, you know, you've moved on, and so you don't ever want to get back into a different spot?
I moved on, and I have great memories, and I have great conversations still. But you know, it's not to go back for recognition,
right?
It's not to go back to hear the roar of the crowd. It's to go back to be able to sit down and have coffee with Fred Cox again.
Mm.
That's what it's about, and that doesn't demean the fans. I appreciate the great support, and you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers were playing our Vikings Sunday, and they were close to 70% of the people in that stadium were Steelers.
That's what I heard, yeah.
But their fans are no better than our fans. Our fans have grown, and we're such, you know, the Vikings are such an important part of not just the state of Minnesota, but Wisconsin and Iowa and South and North Dakota. And we have every bit as good a fan base as those. Wherever I travel in the country, New York City, Florida, California, I just came, before that I was in Pebble Beach. I had at least 5-6 families from Minnesota that came up to me, strangers that had the courage to come up to me, and I loved them coming up to me. I signed their stuff. I took pictures, and I bonded with them, and it was great. And I've got so much going on with business and grandchildren in Atlanta and all the stuff, and I've got a full, wonderful life, but I really hope I have the courage to go back and spend at least one weekend every year the rest of my life at a Viking home game.
I'm sure people would appreciate it here. You know, on the Canton weekend, you mentioned Jim Otto in a wheelchair. Junior Seau obviously wasn't there. Family members have to speak. And you see the degree to which bodies can be changed in part or maybe in large measure by how tough this game can be. Does that make it? Is there any element of sadness to that, or do you say, well, everybody makes their choice? Or how do you deal with that part of it, seeing these guys, many of them, in a very different state? I mean, you're obviously still very vital, but not everybody's in that state.
Oh, so many are challenged. So many are challenged, and so many cannot come that are in the Hall of Fame because they're challenged. I'm not going to name the guy, but I was on the phone with Fred Cox, another guy in our era who's done amazingly well in his life, is just off in awful shape, dementia and so forth. He was a physical player. The concussions we know and took the toll on the players of our generation. And I hope and pray that the present ownership in this league and the leadership in this league will really understand that the safety of our players is at the forefront. And they do not understand that today because they will not recognize what I've said on this program time and again. We have an epidemic of performance-enhancing drugs which enlarge these bodies and make these contacts worse than ever before. That's why we're seeing a 24-year-old kid from Wisconsin, after 1 year at San Francisco, leading tackler, he says, I cannot do the things I would have to do to play. I'm retiring. We're seeing people retire at age 29 and 30. Another offensive lineman at 26, San Francisco, because they see what they're doing to themselves. And this generation now will be worse off than my generation, and we can prevent it. We can prevent it if we had the courage in this leg to do it. But so far, I haven't seen the courage to do it. And I talked to 60 Minutes about doing a documentary because I've got facts and figures from the experts, from the doctors, from the people that do drug testing in this country. Now CNN has said to me that they want to do this documentary on the epidemic of performance-enhancing drugs. I'm not sure they will. They're the only ones that would. You know why? They don't have a contract with the NFL. CBS, 60 Minutes, they said, we really would like to do it. I said, you won't do it because you have too much at stake financially with the NFL. And guess what? After meeting with me, telling me they wanted to do it, I haven't heard from them in 8 months. And I'm not going to. But that's just something that in my lifetime, I hope, this will not destroy football. It will save football. It will not destroy lives. It will save lives. And we cannot get so wrought up in just our teams. We want our guys bigger, stronger, faster. We don't care what happens to them after football. We want to win. We want to win, but we don't want them to sacrifice their lives. And that's what we're doing. These young men will not live to my age. They will not live to their 60s. Junior Seau blew his brains out. And Junior Seau was on PEDs his entire life. And this stuff is powerful now. You ought to hear the doctors talk about it. The drug people talk about it. And it's out there, and somewhere, somehow, some voice has got to get through to the leadership of this league, and they got to, because there is no protocol. The people from the federal government that I've interviewed that are in charge of testing for drugs for all athletic events, now they give baseball an A. They said they're really trying. Football, NFL, and college football, they give an F to. Mm. They're making no effort.
We'll chat again soon. We appreciate you, kind of letting us inside of what you were feeling over the course of this weekend. I thought you did a great job on the speech, and as I said earlier, I'm glad you got a chance to sort of reconnect and maybe say to yourself, "Hey, this is worth doing." You know, this.
Yeah,
is worth-
it's worth doing. I was so blessed to experience the weekend, and thank you, Dan, and it's great to be a Viking, and I'm a lifer.
We'll talk soon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Fran Tarkenton, about as animated and emotional as we've heard him, and we've heard him pretty animated and pretty emotional over the time that we've been chatting with him. He's going to be with us again for the 2015 season.